stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. This is episode number 70, and this is July of 2022. And our guest today worked in the printing business for over 40 years. He's been active in community services. He's traveled around the world, visionary, quite the fisherman, all the way from Albany, Georgia, an old Sophia boy. And also, a lot of people told me that know him well, says he's a smart guy. Mr. Bob Clegg, glad to have you, Bob.
Wonderful to be here. I really enjoy your podcast.
Well, thank you. I've been around for 72 years, and I never have heard of Ike's Fork, Wyoming County. Where is that located? That's where you were born.
That's right. And the best way I can describe it, it's on Route 52 and coming toward Welch on 52. Uh-huh. You go through Hanover, Gilbert, and then Hanover. Yes. And the next place is Ike's Fork. And it's right on the border of McDowell County. So my birth certificate actually says Yeager, West Virginia.
Oh, really?
I-A-E-G-E-R. Uh-huh. Named after the old doctor, some old Dr. Yeager that spelled his name with an I.
I used to go down there and referee wrestling in Yeager High School and Big Creek High School, and that was God's country down there.
Oh, it is. It's lovely.
You grew up in Sophia.
Correct, yeah.
And did you go to Sophia Elementary?
I went first through 1 through 3 in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And We moved to Sophia because Dad owned a lot that was a trade in on a deal when he left to go to Indianapolis. A lot was thrown in when he sold his house. And that's how we ended up in Sophia.
Now you actually lived on the road to McAlpin?
We lived on a hill.
On the hill.
On the right, off the road to McAlpin. On the one side was the tunnel. And the other side was a hill that I lived on.
That was quite a neighborhood, too. I mean, you had some outstanding individuals.
Yeah, we didn't know we were outstanding at the time. But we had about 9 boys that lived on one side of the tunnel and the other side of the tunnel. And they all ended up extremely successful in one way or another. A couple of great baseball players, a couple of wrestling champions, and Mac Billings is an extremely great athlete and a marbles champion. I mean,
who was the marbles champion?
Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones.
He was valedictorian. We also had 2 valedictorians, not me. But we had 2 valedictorians came off of that hill at about the same time, Bobby Arms and Aaron Jones. And Aaron later became a federal mine inspector here.
Well, I know a lot of people don't realize how big marbles were back at that time. And, you know, there were some guys from down on Cold River, Raymond Gerald, I think, won a world championship 2 or 3 years. And, you know, just a big time. And even at the school I went to, which was in town, we didn't take it quite as seriously, but we always had entrance into the, I think, Beckley Newspapers sponsored that.
Ah, that's right. You remember it better than I do.
Did you have any, when you were growing up, did you have any heroes as a kid? I mean, was anybody?
Well, to be honest about it, John F. Kennedy was absolutely my idol, more or less. And you know, I mean, I guess kids in those days, I mean, he was just really somebody you looked up to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you remember where you were when you found out it was.
Oh yeah, I was. We football season was over, so we were out. We were up on the field and playing around and fooling around, and Coach Lacey's son Neil, who was a teacher for many years,
I know Neil.
In Woodrow, he walked up to the field with tears in his eyes, and he said, "Gather around." And I believe it was the coach that said that we were going home, that John had died.
The when you got in high school, Sophia started high school in the ninth grade, didn't they?
Correct, yeah.
And you played football and for Coach Lacey, wrestled for Dick Patterson?
Yes.
What kind of guy was Coach Lacey? I knew Dick Patterson, and I know Coach Douglas, the basketball coach, and I didn't really know Coach Lacey. I knew the outstanding athletes he was when he was younger, him and his brothers. But what kind of guy, what coach was he?
He was kind of tough. He wanted to be tough, but, you know, you could see through him.
Yeah.
he worked us pretty hard. But this is one of the greatest thing I could say about him. He knew the kids. He knew the kids, and he kind of knew the backgrounds. And both he and Douglas would kind of give to, by that I mean, he took that into consideration whenever he played them and whenever he practiced them. He never cut anybody down.
Uh-huh.
Maybe me a couple of times.
Well, you started on defense for 3 years, and then you was a quarterback when you were a senior.
Right.
And as a wrestler, I know you went to the States as a junior. You were the only guy from Sophia who went to the States, weren't you, that year?
I was the only one. Yeah, oh, yeah. I think I might have been the only one.
133 pounds, 1965. I had a cousin. He was a couple of years behind you, but he wrestled about every year. Daryl Kincaid.
Oh yeah,
he was a little guy.
Great guy.
He was a pretty smart fella too. But I think he was on the wrestling team all 4 years. But I think he started out about 95 pounds or something like that. But now your senior year, you didn't wrestle a whole lot. What?
Well, I wanted to go to college. That was a super big goal of mine. And so I wanted to try to save as much money as I could. And I got a job at William's Funeral Home. And I'll tell you, that was the epitome of jobs at Sophia. If you could get a job at William's Funeral Home.
Everybody I've talked to from Sophia has worked at William's Funeral Home.
And you were on call every other night. Been back in those days, we were with ambulance, too.
Yeah.
So we were on call every other night. And you got out of school early. When it was funerals that they wanted you to work, it was just too much for me to do all of it. And I was really having trouble making not just the next weight class, but the next weight class by that time. And I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. You're talking about William's Funeral Home. I delivered flowers for Webb's Floors when I was a senior in high school, and then maybe a little bit after that. Of course, we were their primary furnisher of flowers, and that's when flowers were big back then. I would deliver flowers. That's when Paul Flanagan, Marshall Teaster, and Roger Coleman.
Right ahead of me.
All them guys.
Behind me. They're right behind me. Yeah.
And they were something else. So they always had something to tell me. And then I usually ended up getting to deliver the flowers on the funeral days because we always got the family spray. And so that was the custom back then. But spent a lot of time there. Never saw Fred X a whole lot, but sometimes, you know.
Wonderful man.
Yeah.
Wonderful man. And his nephew ran the funeral home over in Crab Orchard. And he was a character. He's still around. He's a great guy.
But I saw the other day where the funeral home is for sale, or it has been for sale. They haven't been able to get rid of it, but I think they've got a little added a little bit of land to it now, so somebody might end up purchasing that. But did you had some school activities besides you participating? You kept score for the basketball team, baseball team. Did you have any other activities in high school that you were involved with? I know it's kind of tough when you're working, but
well. What was kind of fun was I was baseball manager. I don't mean that. I mean, that was the boy that carried the balls around. And because I love baseball, but I just wasn't that good at it. And Coach Lacey, he was the coach for that also. And I got to travel with the team and the whole deal. I did that sophomore and junior year. Kept score, learned how to keep score in baseball. And that was kind of a big deal. That's pretty intricate when you...
Yeah.
And it was really funny. So when season started, that's one thing I wasn't going to miss. So I went down for the first day, and Coach says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm the manager. I got to keep score and do all that stuff." And he said, "I got to get somebody else. You're a senior. I don't want to fool with you." And I got to keep score and do all those kind of things in basketball too, and introduce the players, you know, when they came out on it. So I got to go do all that stuff and really enjoyed it. Plus wrestle and play football. I wasn't that great at quarterback, but in those days there wasn't much passing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I knew all the plays and who everybody's supposed to block.
That helps. What'd y'all run out of? Wing T or?
We wing T. Yeah. Stoker was the only one who ran the single wing.
Yeah.
And boy, that was exciting playing him.
When I was coaching, we had to play Stoker Junior High at that time, and of course they were still running single wing, and that's the only team on our schedule that ran that. And it took us; it was hard to get ready.
They had all that trap blocking on the line, and you'd say to the, I played linebacker, all 3 years, and I outside linebacker, and I'd move inside on a 5-4 or whatever, so I'd move inside. Now here's a 150-pound guy playing inside linebacker. And I tell the lineman up there, I said, don't go in there. And psychologically, it's they just could not hesitate. And as soon as they got across that line, it got hit from behind. And it was legal.
Yeah. And it's, believe it or not, there's still some teams that run some single wing out there. Not too many of them, though. But and when you graduated, you went to W Tech,
Washington Tech,
down in Montgomery. And just kind of curious, what did you think when they moved the school to Beckley?
Boy, I was torn. I served on the printing newspaper operations committee for all 25 or 30 years. There's no future in printing, and they shut that program down before they moved to Beckley. But it's really torn because you had to be not just a little bit, and I'm one of them, so I can talk about them. You had to be a little bit more than a nerd to go to Montgomery in those days. I mean, you know, you go to the campus of Concord or, you know, the campuses, these beautiful campuses and all that, and then you go to Montgomery, and, half of them are carrying slide rules on their belt, you know, and the town was, man, it was down in that holler, and it was, you had to be kind of special. No girls, you know.
Suburb of Smithers.
But it was Vietnam days, and you had a lot of folks from the north that came down there, from north New Jersey and New York and various places where, you know, they came to get in school so that maybe to avoid a draft. I mean, I'm not going to say that, but that was the reason they came. But some of them were, certainly. And but so you had a good mix of people.
Yeah.
And you really learned a lot more, or I did, a lot more about people than studies necessarily. I mean, the studies are the same pretty much anywhere where you go. But But the people were wonderful.
New Jersey didn't have a community college system back then, and so a lot of them came down Beckley College and places like that. Just to, again, some of them were avoiding the draft probably, when you started at Tech, what were you planning on majoring in? What were your...
I'm thinking about being an engineer, but when I saw that, when I saw the curriculum, I decided that probably was a little bit above my abilities. So I went into business because it was a pretty kind of general thing and whatever. I got to know several guys that were in printing management and program down there with Bert Buckby and Jack Knuckles. And they were getting job offers. The seniors were getting job offers. Well, like I say, if you were 1A, nobody was getting job offers. I thought, wow, I'm going to change while I can. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be able to much better get a job. And when I graduated, I switched my junior year in the printing management. Best thing that ever happened to me in the world.
Yeah, you mentioned Jack Knuckles. He was, when I was into the Raleigh County Wrestling Hall of Fame, he did a lot of printing for us, our programs and tickets. And John Lucento kind of lined him up, for us. And sometimes I'm sure he had students doing it, but sometimes he'd charge us and sometimes he wouldn't, But he was a real easy guy to work with. And so you got married while you were in school.
Right. I got married between my sophomore and junior year. Uh-huh. I went into my junior year. Judy was my high school sweetheart. And quite honestly, two could live as cheap as one.
Sure.
And it was just for practical reasons. And she started working in the administrative office at Tech. And we were like a lot of young people, just no money, and if you got a pizza on Saturday night, man, that was a good time.
Did you have some siblings too?
I had two brothers and a sister. I was the baby. I was 10 years behind my nearest brother, and they all died pretty young. My brother closest to me, he died at 48.
Really?
And my older brother was 14 years older than me, and he died at 55, and then my sister died. She was 16 when I was born. So it was. So yeah, I lost all my siblings pretty early.
So now, when you graduated from college, you started work immediately at Beckley Newspaper, didn't you?
George Hodel. it was terrific. I didn't really want to leave West Virginia at all. I wanted to stay in West Virginia. And George called me in for an interview, and I got to probably the greatest job anybody could get. Now, it didn't pay a whole lot, but he put me under his wing, and I was his administrative assistant. And I worked in each department in the newspaper and learned the whole business. The business was in flux at that time because it's hard, kind of hard to explain if people don't know printing, but those were the hot type days.
Uh-huh.
With the old Mergenthaler linotype machines and stereotype plates on the press and the whole nine. It was kind of dirty and hard work but it was just it was fascinating. And this was one of the things that it was most fascinating about it. Because of the job I had, I could float around and kind of see what's going on. And to go into the wire machine and read the stories as they were coming, we had about six or eight wire machines. And you had AP and UPI and some other wire machines, and watch the stories being dumped out of New York and out of Washington. It was really something to watch those tick-tick. And it was just in a glass cage kind of deal.
Uh-huh.
But the cool part was downstairs, a little tape, like paper tape, and it was about the wide as about maybe an inch and a half wide. While that was dumping upstairs letters on it, it was downstairs, it was punching holes in this tape that when the story was finished, they'd handwrite on there what story that was and run it on the linotype machine to get the to get the type out.
Wow. Well, the Hodels were a unique family.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you, John, and George Warren, and Emil. They were all different.
Yes. They were. George was a really great guy, and he I think he talked earlier to McAllister. He hired McAllister and me and Frank Wood, who later became, years later, became publisher. He hired some of these young guys, and in the back of his head, he was pulling us along. I think in the back of his mind, he wanted all of us, to take the old-timers' jobs when they left.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it wasn't expressed. That wasn't in a contract or something. It was just, he hired several of us. Later, he hired Larry Darlington. You know, a lot of these young guys, and just took a chance on them. And he took a chance on me to convert to photocomp, to photocomposition, and what they call cold type.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about over $1 million in those days to make this conversion. And I was 20-some years old. And it was kind of like George and his brothers, when this strange new technology was coming through the door, and they would get frustrated. But they were all different and all kind of interesting. And Emil was a great guy. He'd hold his editorial up. Sometimes it was the last thing to go at night before we started printing. And it would drive us crazy.
Yeah, I read it.
It would drive us crazy. John, he enjoyed running a linotype machine more than he did it, I think. You know, he was just a hands-on guy. That's it.
Well, you had some great guys in the printing room, Al Ellison.
Al
was my brother's scoutmaster back years ago, and then Dwayne Lilly, and great fellow.
Skinny
guys put
Ellison,
in a lot of time.
Skinny Ellison, Al's brother, was, in those days they called him mechanical superintendent, and he was my mentor, and just one of my very best friends. He was a great guy. We went on many, many trips together, visiting other newspapers and conventions and that kind of thing. And he introduced me to people all over the country.
Now, George Warren wanted you guys to get involved with the community, like the JCs, and he actually encouraged you. And you got that. I knew the JCs were very active. I guess my first acquaintance was going on a couple of the trips to Morgantown to watch the Mountaineers play. They had the buses with which was really entertaining in itself. But you guys did. You guys were in charge of most of the amateur boxing around, children's program, Christmas programs.
Golden Gloves is one of our major projects.
Yeah,
and it was really interesting because we didn't just sponsor the tournament; we set up gyms, and some of the guys were real active in setting up places where the kids could train.
Uh-huh.
And punch the bags and do all that, because it was all independent. I mean, there weren't any schools doing that or anything. And it was really hard to put on and get boxers, and it kept getting more difficult as time went on. But either you wanted to do it or you didn't want to do it. But we had a good program.
You individually, you guys were doing everything from selling apple butter. I think you organized a trip to, that might have not been through the JCs, but to New York, to Broadway. It might have been through the newspaper.
It was a newspaper.
Yeah. So you were pretty big in the JCs. You became the president locally, and this is one of the most active clubs they had. And then you became the state president, and that actually took, you had to campaign and run for office.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, locally, the local chapter, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Of course, your friend and my friend, Pete Tirico, was a predecessor, president, and before that was Paul Hartling. So we had a core of young men. It was just terrific. Terrific young men all through Beckley. And we had over 100 members that my year. it was just amazing. And we worked with the Mental Health Society. We worked the Airport Authority. We worked with these groups on major stuff besides the smaller stuff that we just kind of, you know, was fun to do. But the big deal was it gave everybody an opportunity, a young man, an opportunity to be a chairman of something and fail, and nothing bad happens to you. But it taught you how to organize, how to put things together, and how to carry it through. And it was a terrific organization. And it's really, I mean, tears almost come to your eyes. At that time, they had around 400,000 members in the United States.
Wow.
And I think there's about 14,000 now.
Wow. That's
the demise was incredible.
And you also were on the Sophia Library Committee. I mean, you did a lot of different things to fulfill the purpose. Bob, our time is about out. But we haven't even got started yet. So can I get you to come back?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. I don't get up here very often from Albany, you know.
So. I've got a ton of questions. So we're going to get you back. And anybody else out there would like to be on the show, just hit me up at awbennett50@gmail.com. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. Until next time, God bless you.